I think you can just rely on that one-legged fadeaway for an entire game. You could just say, I'm going to be Dirk today and get 20. So that's the work process.
To just be able to say, I'm going to be Dirk for a day. That's
yeah.
That's he yeah. has that. He has that.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is Aaron Washington coming back at you with the BCB podcast, number 121. So glad to be back with you guys this evening. And I am very happy to be joined by Bo Estes over here. He is one of the great voices of NBA TV, NBA.com, the pioneer of the infamous top 10 rapid fire, which I do want to ask Bo about here in a second here once we get into the podcast. But Bo, so glad to have you on and so glad to continue the kind of trend I have going here with NBA TV personalities here. I had Sekou Smith on last week. He was fantastic. So I'm excited to keep the trend going here with you and dive into a little ball this evening.
I'm excited to be here. Sekou's a good buddy of mine, and we always enjoy talking hoops. Sekou and I, geez, we can get on a conversation and talk for hours and hours and hours. And, you know, years ago, that wasn't podcasting, but we should have been podcasting years ago when we did this. But yeah, I'm thrilled to join you.
Yeah. Yeah. Glad to have you here. And I have to point out, since the people that are watching this podcast see the Sports Business Classroom banner behind you, Bo here was one of the great voices as well for Sports Business Classroom. So if anybody is watching that's alumni like me, of the program, know him very well. I did fantastic work with the Ask Me Anythings and all those conversations we had with some of the great people in the basketball industry, NBA atmosphere. So another accomplishment here for Bo. He is definitely one of the celebrities here. If you know anything about basketball in the NBA, definitely got to get to know this guy. He knows his stuff. And he has a great voice. But I want to ask you here, because I saw on your Twitter feed, you have a little post here pinned at the top. So apparently you want people to know about this and read your story. But if you could, just a little short summary for us here. Some of the tips from that interview here with Tim Cato that you did a few years ago about the top 10. What can you tell us here about the rapid fire top 10 and how that came to be and how you became so well known for that kind of trademark, as we know on NBA.com?
It's weird because it was never something that I set out to be known for, honest to God. It was something that sort of happened organically. The reason that I started saying top 10 faster and faster was really just because we had crap software at NBA.com at the time, honest to God. And so what happens, and this is a little bit technical, but if your audience can follow along, you have an in and an out point. And typically they allow me, as somebody doing the voiceover, to talk beyond the out point. But this software was having problems with that. So I knew that, and I would be aware that we would have to start all over if I didn't get out by the out time. So I would just be going along, going along, going along, and realize I had 2 seconds. I'd just say, NBA.com top 10, just as fast as I could, just to get out as quickly as I could so we could all go home at 2 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And then it grew from there. Frankly, the NBA Reddit community was just wonderful to me. People treated me really well. And the rhyming thing is something that I think I'm afflicted with more than something that I attempt to do. There's a condition called clanging that somebody from the Kenyan Literary Review suggests that I have, where things, if I want them to, can just pop out in rhyme naturally. And the weird thing about it is, like, if you were to have a rap Olympics, I would imagine people with that condition would be disqualified. It's almost like being able to count cards in your head for gambling. It's the equivalent of that. But you know, it's a fun thing. It's the wildest thing. My dream as a kid was to be an announcer for the NBA. I'm an announcer for the NBA, and I'm known for something. I couldn't have asked for more as a kid growing up and to have all this happen. I'm absolutely over the moon about it. And the NBA.com top 10 is something that we do wonderful numbers on. We really do. So many people get involved. So many people love it. So many people send me notes. I've met people from around the world. I now do top 10s for the league in Australia, the NBL. So it's become a phenomenon. I mean, I can imagine that, you know, I'll be doing even more for different leagues coming up soon. So I'm just so wonderfully thankful for the NBA fans and basketball fans around the world.
That's so cool, Bo. And I'm sure I speak for the NBA community myself when we say that we're glad to have you. I've been watching NBA Top 10 on NBA.com for years and years.
Thank you.
You know, you're one of the best in the business. So definitely give you props for that, for sure. But to get into the formal content here today, we are discussing the five Christmas Day games that have been announced for the slate for this year. Just so happy, first off, to have these games in the first place. We didn't know if it was going to be a December start to the season or January. And the NBA on Christmas is a tradition. It's a set schedule that every year we're so accustomed to seeing. So just so happy that the NBA, you know, the players union and the owners were able to come together and make this possible for us to be able to get back before Christmas and have this slate. But the first game I wanted to discuss here with you, Bo, is the Pelicans at Heat. This is the 12 o'clock game to kick things off. And, you know, a first thing I had noticed about this game is, like, you have to look at the first team that's in this matchup, the Pelicans. And there's one reason they're in this matchup. That's because of Zion Williamson himself, the number one pick from 2019. I think it's the sole presence here on this team that have made them a hot commodity. And then they are here in this matchup. And if we go back to last season, I don't think they got all their appearances in because of the hiatus, but they had 30 national TV games scheduled for the Pelicans out of 82, which didn't happen to be 82, but that's just an incredible number here. So just looking at this matchup, Zion is on the schedule, the Heat are on the schedule. The Heat might be getting slept on here a little bit, just looking at their performance last season, and they don't have any national TV matchups in the days leading up to this game, and they only have two preseason games at all. So double question at you here, but I want to hit you just right after that. You know, Zion, is he enough? You know, are you excited enough to see this matchup with Zion if, you know, him solely driving their appearance on this in this game? And then for Miami's sake, like, are they really being slept on here? Some people are saying the Roma's a fluke. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Okay, so two things. One, obviously Zion is the driver for the Pelicans being on television, right? I don't think it's a surprise to anybody. And the reason you know this is take Zion off that team. Are they on national TV on Christmas? No.
Probably not.
No chance in the world. No chance. So, you know, he's a wonderfully exciting player. I've been around this game since the early 90s with the NBA. I've been doing it since 1994, 1995-ish, somewhere in there. And he's one of the five, six, seven, eight players that you can think of when they come out. It's must-see TV. You have to see him. You have to see what he's going to do. It was a bit disappointing last year, right? Because we open up the season and he's not there. He's injured. And so, you know, we have the Pelicans on TV without him. And it's just not as good. It's just not as exciting. He is the person that people want to see. So I think that is the reason that they're there. I think you're 100% right on that. Are the Heat getting slept on? Yeah, a little bit, right? They were the finalists from last year, and they were a good finalist. It wasn't a fluke that they were there. They just put together a team that isn't comprised of people that you knew of since they were 14 years old as superstar ballers. Like Zion, we knew when he was 15 years old. He had a million Instagram followers because of all the stuff he was doing. He comes there. There are people that come up in basketball and they're the number one ranked recruit their whole lives, and they're superstars growing up 14. Look, there's a kid named Amani Bates who is that now. He is the guy that the whole world is looking at, maybe the best prospect since LeBron James. He is the guy that they're building a generation on. So Zion is in that mold of people. And the Miami Heat have guys who've worked their tails off, frankly, to be good at what they do. And on top of that, to fit into this modern game in a way that they can take advantage of what the rules are and of the style of play. And of that, to me, that Heat culture matters a ton. To get the right guys to buy into that and to really play the defense that they require with the intensity and the constant attention that they require. So is that as exciting on television for the, and I hate to use the word casual fan, but that's what it is the average fan. Maybe not. Maybe, you know, I'm to see Jimmy Butler really dog somebody in the mid-range on T isn't the most exciting thing in the world. But if you're a fan, if you're a fan of what he's put in the career and, you know, sort of their, the thing about Jimmy Butler to me is he really rubbed some people the wrong way for a while. And by some people, I mean teammates, right? But then he hit the Heat and it was perfect.
Yep.
It was absolutely perfect. He found his home. They found their guy and it was perfect. So I respect that. And, you know, to the degree that if we're saying slept on, as in, are we not giving them enough credit for the success they've had in anticipation of the success they might have? I think the answer is yes. You know, are they, how many times are the Heat going to be on my top 10 without Derrick Jones? Fewer, fewer, right?
Bam
will be on there. So I think, you know, you're looking at competing interests, right? Quality of play versus entertainment factor.
Definitely, definitely. That's a balance that's, you know, it's definitely noticeable. You know, you really have to consider two audiences. Like you and me, we watch this game at a deep level. We study the game all the time, every day. But for the people on the outside, you said it. It's like certain styles of play are not very conducive to success on the big screen for ratings. And that's the whole talk right now. It's like NBA ratings are sagging and there's things happening. So I think they looked at this schedule and they really wanted to put those teams that have huge draws even more than usual, because we've seen in the past, the Knicks have gotten that kind of token spot just because they're the Knicks. And, you know, that was just kind of the way it went. But now it's like, let's find the draws. Like, you know, the Heat might've been one of those teams. It's like, they're not a huge draw, but they're in the finals. So we have to give them a spot. We'll throw them at 12 o'clock when people are still waking up. You know, I'll be in Denver for that time slot and I'll, you know, it's 10 a.m. over there and people are still kind of waking up and opening gifts and stuff. So they're like, you know, we can put that on the back burner. People will really notice. So you made some great points about that. It's really
tough, man. It's really tough because the league doesn't survive without their television partners in the same way that they are now. Mm-hmm. The television partners have to have good ratings to justify those television contracts. Exactly. So it all works together. It really does. You know, in a perfect world, does every team generate huge ratings and every team has the same amount of buzz? Probably. But, you know, this is the world we're operating in. And I think, you know, I think that's an interesting matchup too, because as much as you want to see Zion do what he's going to do, there's a team out there that's going to stop Zion from doing what he's going to do too. That's fine. That's what they're programmed to do. That's what they're born to do.
They're equipped. I can't wait to see Jimmy versus Zion. It's kind of like, the unstoppable force, immovable object. Like Jimmy Butler's not an easy guy to move out of there, but Zion is a train himself. Yeah. So that's one of the matchups I can't wait to see. But it's overall, just looking at that matchup on the court, it's going to be super exciting for a multitude of reasons. Brandon Ingram is back in the fold with his max deal. You know, he's got his money. He's been paid. He's one of those go-to players. So they have a player of their own that's going to be able to command that attention from the Heat. So he's going to need somebody on him that can really contain him. So across the board, it's going to be very interesting. You know, without Jrue Holiday, it's going to be a slightly different dynamic in the backcourt. But, I mean, there's a guy named Eric Bledsoe that's going to try to fill the void for him. So he's going to be, you know, definitely a dog over there. And, you know, his shooting is suspect, but it's just another driver for that team that's going to make these exciting. So from both sides, there's going to be draws. It's going to be a game that's going to be fun to watch, even though it's, you know, at 12 p.m. and it's one of the openers, so to speak.
I think we end up like, when you think about that matchup, the thing I think about is my immediate attraction is the Pelicans are on offense, the Heat are on defense. How are the Heat going to stop the Pelicans? And how are the Pelicans going to handle the intensity of the Heat? But what you don't think about is, so the Heat expend a lot of energy on defense.
True.
So that's going to force the Pelicans to really play on offense to get anything done. Let's go back to the other end of the court where the Heat have some shooters. And that's going to force you to rotate and be ready outside. The Heat could get a lot of easy buckets in that matchup to me. I think a young team is going to require a large attention span to be able to keep up with what that veteran Heat team does. And to me, they're just so good at exposing your weaknesses. They don't have Michael Jordan out there. They don't. But they do have smarts. They do have guts. And people sort of like diminish the value of that. I think it's really valuable. I think it's really valuable.
Absolutely. And it's going to be, it's going to be a huge battle, but the Pelicans are going to have a challenge on their hands. I mean, you kind of alluded to it, you know, the shooters from Miami are going to command a lot of attention, but the Pelicans aren't exactly a team that have done a great job of paying attention to the defensive game plan every day, every game. Going back to last season, they were one of the worst teams defensively. And I think that's a major reason why they didn't even make the playoffs going into the bubble. They finished 2-6 from last season to end their season. So it's just a bad taste in their mouth. But I think for that reason, they're going to have a slight chip on their shoulder going into this Christmas matchup, losing Jrue Holiday. Those guys have something to prove there. Brandon's got something to prove now that he's the big man on campus, so to speak. Zion is still there. So, yeah, I'm really excited for it, not just because I'm a Heat fan, but legitimately because we have kind of like two almost contrasting styles, tough nose defense, high-flying highlight maker on the other end. So that's a great way to start off the day.
And you'll be up at 10 a.m. in Denver, right, to catch
it? Absolutely.
Okay, absolutely. Good to know. Good to know
about it. Yep, couldn't miss that matchup. So let's move on here and look at the second matchup of the day. That I believe it's at 2:30 p.m.
Yeah,
it's going to be Warriors Bucks. I mean, you can't ask for a better matchup, especially in the second time slot here with Giannis, Steph, even without Klay. You know, I'll kind of try to keep him out of this. You know, I mentioned Klay to Sekou last week, and you know, he got him down a little bit. So definitely a tough break for him. But in any case, I mean, it's going to be great to see. And one key storyline I'm looking at as we go into this matchup is, how do the Warriors contain Milwaukee's attack? The drive and kick, the incredible spacing. It's like the Bucks have something to offer that the Warriors have had in the past. The five out, all the spacing, the drive and kick game is going to be on point. The Warriors are not going to have the same defensive identity they had in the past. You know, Iguodala is gone. Klay is gone. They don't have that Bogut in the middle that they had. You know, there's going to be a lot of adjustments for them looking at it defensively. So that's huge. They finished 26th in defensive efficiency last season. So we'll have to see what the Warriors can offer up when the Bucks are on the attack. And there's a guy named Greek Freak Giannis riding down the lane, ready to dunk on Curry as he's done in the past. Go back and watch that All-Star game from a couple years ago. He knows that very well.
Steph Curry won two MVPs in a row. Giannis is on two MVPs in a row. This is one of the marquee matchups to me. Like, if I were ranking them for the day, this may be number one, maybe number two, as far as just television eyes on it. Steph coming back is huge. He has a massive, massive, not to be underrated fan base. People love that guy. Him coming back is going to be massive. But Giannis, to me, boy, he's like I said, twice the defending champ or defending MVP. And I think he has more room to grow, if that's realistically possible. I think he gets better and better and better. So it's going to be fun to watch that progress for me. I'm fascinated with how the Warriors deploy their new number one draft pick, what sort of defensive responsibilities they assign to him, how much pressure they allow him to take in that role. Because, you know, does he guard Giannis? Do you let him do something like, because well, you talk about like A, a challenge, and B, a potential ego blow. Mm-hmm. And then two, I think it's interesting for me, you know, watching Steph working with Andrew Wiggins. What did they play? One game together last year. What does Andrew Wiggins do? Does he learn to be a more efficient player? Because you know the critique on his game is that he's not efficient enough. I heard comments from him today saying, the one game I played with Steph, it made the world so much easier because of, you know, the term everybody loves on NBA Twitter is gravity, the gravity that surrounds Steph.
For sure.
So Wiggins is going to have space. He's going to have room. Can he do anything with that? And then for Milwaukee, to me, that's a team that's twice been snake bitten in the playoffs, 2 years in a row. They've gone out earlier than they should have gone out. So what do they do to overcome that? Where are they mentally? Because remember, we've got a quick turnaround this year. We were playing just a couple months ago.
Yep.
So where are they mentally? The lineup has changed a bit. I'm excited to see what that team does mentally, and I'm excited to see what Golden State has now. Because like you mentioned the blow of Klay. Losing Klay is humongous. Where's Draymond Green right now? Can he bring back the same defensive intensity? Can he be a stopper again like he once was? I'm skeptical of that, frankly. I don't know that he can. I think he can be very good. I don't know that he can be the best defender in the NBA again. So I think there's just a lot of question marks that will start to be answered in this game. I'll be honest with you, Aaron. When I think of an NBA season normally, and I've said this for years on shows and radio shows and whatever, I start evaluating a team on Christmas Day, like Christmas Day going forward. I don't know what you have in the November to December early range. I think people are sorting stuff out and learning about each other and their new teammates, maybe new coaches, new influences, what they've worked on over the summer. So it's going to be tough for me because this is a little more condensed and I'm going to have to adapt a little bit, but I am excited to see sort of marquee teams going against each other and marquee stars coming back like Steph and Dre.
Me too. And speaking of Draymond Green, I mean, I was looking at him last season. He really looked disinterested. You know, he was on a team that he knew that team wasn't going anywhere. So I think he really saved his body. He really held himself back. You didn't see that fire. You didn't see him getting those technical fouls like usual. You really just saw him kind of just fade into the background and just kind of accept what was happening. Like, he still went out there and played, but I mean, it wasn't the same Draymond. He was in cruise control.
I think he thrives on those peak moments, those pressure moments, those very difficult teams that they match up against. I think that's where he thrives. If it's a moment where, you know, there isn't a lot on the line, I don't think he's bringing his A game. No. One thing I'd like to see a guy like that do in a situation like that is work on in-game situations, things that you can improve upon. So I would like to see, you know, if he's developed anything new to his game. The loss of Clay is hard to overstate, man.
It really is.
I mean, like, that guy is a guy that is right there with Steph in spacing the defense. He's as good a pure shooter as I have ever seen. His shot fundamentals, to me, right there with Ray Allen, put it in a book. It's a textbook. It's just gorgeous to look at. So, you know, and that's just the start of Clay. Clay, not only that, he's a wonderful defensive player, and I think he's just a guy that brings a lot to the locker room, just a lot of chill. So they're going to miss him. They're going to miss him. And, you know, like, you started this season before the Clay injury thinking, can they get back and scrape together another title with this squad? I don't think they're a title team now. I really don't, with the pieces they have in place. The only wild card I would say is if Andrew Wiggins has revolutionized his game. Everybody knows that there is physical talent there. Physical talent is not basketball skills. Those are two different things. It can be used to take advantage of your basketball skills, but I don't know that Andrew Wiggins has put together the basketball skills that matches his physical talent. But if he's done that to some degree, that's the only wild card I would say. Otherwise, as good as Wiseman I think can be, and is an interesting a piece as I think he can be, I don't think they have a championship team right now as constructed without Klay Thompson.
I don't either. And that's a great point about Klay and everything, that the whole team was kind of like, they're just linked so well.
Yes.
You lose one piece, everything just kind of gets thrown off. Like,
yeah.
Back when they were in their peak, you know, 2016, it's like, the ball was on a string. It was moving. Like, everybody was in sync. So it's like, you know, you have that chain. You break one piece of the chain, the whole thing falls apart. So that's a great point about it. I think they're still going to be a very solid team. And, you know, even one of my friends flack the other day, it's like, you know, I told him, I was like, it's going to be uphill battle to make the playoffs. And he was like, well, you know, we still have Draymond. We still have Curry. And about Curry, I mean, this guy, I think, is going to be on a mission. We haven't seen Curry kind of be that solo driver of a team since, you know, prior to KD's arrival. So I think from that perspective, it's kind of a silver lining. I really just want to, you know, just look at his impact on this team and what he's going to be able to do, just kind of being that guy again, the MVP, you know, 29 to 30 points per game, you know, throwing up all those shots. That's going to be fun. We haven't seen that Curry in a long time.
Well, you talk about a couple of fascinating things. I think if you talk to real Golden State fans, people who've been in love with that team for a long time, that 2000, the team that won the championship before the 73 win team lost, I think that's their favorite iteration prior to Kevin Durant come along. I think they felt that was the most pure Warriors basketball. And so I think it's going to be interesting. So many people, the critique of Steph Curry is that he's had so many good players around him. Can he do it on his own? You're going to find out now. I mean, I won't be surprised to see him do very well. To me, the challenge of this all is that the next time Steph Curry and Klay Thompson line up in playoff basketball next to each other, at best, Steph Curry's 34 years old.
Yeah.
At best. So that hurts. I mean, Steph Curry at 34 is not LeBron at 34. Mm-hmm. It's not the same thing. LeBron is from another planet athletically.
Yeah, we don't know what he is. We're still trying to figure that out.
Exactly, man. But like with Steph, him at 34 is a different story. So I thought that this year could be the one year that they could maybe make a run at it. Can they do it next year? God, it's going to be tough. It's going to depend on Wiseman. Maybe Wiggins is somehow better. I don't know, but there's just a lot of ifs now with the Warriors when there used to be no ifs at all.
There really are. And I think it's telling about this team that we've had this, you know, I think it's almost 10 minutes now we've talked about the Warriors, where you have the Bucks coming off of number one seed, and, you know, they were the favorites to win the East, and it's like they're getting no love on this podcast. So I think the Warriors still have that draw. That goes back to your point. Steph Curry drives this whole thing. He's back, And yeah. now he takes an entire segment of a podcast. Like, he's that powerful.
He really is. And, you know, like I said, we started off by saying Giannis 2 times in a row MVP and Steph twice in a row MVP. But there is something, and we talked about the Heat not getting the shine that they deserve. There's mm-hmm. something about there's a magic about certain players and certain teams that sparks awe in people. It really does. It's the stuff that gets on our top 10, frankly. And that's not necessarily different from winning basketball, but it's also not necessarily the same thing. Steph Curry has a magic. When a guy's hitting a 35-footer and he's built like your neighbor, he's like a skinny little kid. It looks like a skinny little kid out there, and he's 6'2", 6'3". It's magical. What he did revolutionized the game of basketball. So he has that magic. And that's the draw. That's the draw that the people that put these matchups on Christmas look for. And Steph Curry is one of those guys that has it. And, you know, not to say that Giannis doesn't. I think a lot of people love Giannis. But oh, yeah. Giannis is like LeBron build plus. Like, he's like taller than LeBron, bigger than LeBron. He's truck like LeBron, but more. So that doesn't blow people away, because the sense to me a little bit with that is like, that's unrelatable.
Exactly.
Who he's else?
you know, he's a god.
Steph Curry, you can relate to. If I go to the gym and I keep shooting, well, it's not going to happen. But maybe, you know, it's realistic. So there's a magic with Steph that I think that you just some guys have it, and he's one of those guys that just really has it.
Big time, big time. We're talking about magic, and there's a guy that Steph Curry played with just a couple years ago, Kevin Durant. I mean, this guy brings magic of his own, and another player. Like, this is probably the second or third player we talked about now that's coming off of an injury that we haven't seen play in quite some time. So he's going to be back in action against the Celtics. So this matchup is going to be huge for a multitude of reasons. Kyrie and KD first action. That's always fun to see. From the Celtics' perspective, they had a disappointing playoff run. But Tatum is on board. They still have Jaylen Brown. So it's going to be an adjustment for them, because they have an injury of their own in Kemba Walker. He's not expected back until early January at the absolute earliest, so probably later January once he's reevaluated and he has time to get back into the lineup. But both teams, I mean, they have a lot to bring to the table, and it's a battle of elite wings. Like, Tatum versus KD is must-see stuff. And Tatum is on track to kind of be a player. I'm not going to say he's going to be as good as KD, but – I mean, he's on track to be one of the great stars in our game from that position. So that's a huge test for him. And it's a test that I think he's going to rise to the occasion to meet and really just prove that he's on the level of some of these elite wings you've seen in the NBA over the past few years.
The first time I saw Kevin Durant, he was a junior in high school, and he was playing against the number one player in the nation, and that was Lou Williams. Mm. Kevin Durant was as skinny as a tripod back then. He's still really skinny now, but he was just super thin. But you could tell his skills were something that we hadn't seen before on a guy with that build. And so what's going to be interesting in his return is Kevin Durant combined. We talked about skills and athletic talent. He combined those wonderfully. Unique athletic talent, so big, so long, and yet so coordinated. I don't know. The thing that I can't wait to see with him is, where is he athletically? Are we going to notice a difference? People always talk about the guy that came back from this the first time in basketball memory was Dominique Wilkins. And I was here when that was happening. Dominique Wilkins, obviously a star with the Atlanta Hawks years and years and years and years and years ago. Mm-hmm. But he always lost a little bit athletically, just a touch. I think KD can afford to lose a little bit athletically. I don't think it will cost him that much. Because I think his skills are such, his back to the basket game, his face up game, his handle, he can get and just in look at what Kobe Bryant did with his career. Look what Michael Jordan did with his career. I think in some ways LeBron's doing with his career, figuring out easier, more efficient ways to score the basketball as time goes on. I think Kevin Durant maybe has more ability than any of those people, in the sense that he's just built so much bigger than them. So he can do things that will work. So I'm excited to see where Kevin Durant is. I'm excited to see him play with Kyrie Irving down the stretch and see what that pairing looks like. And, you know, you mentioned Jason Tatum. If you look at his stats over the course of his early career, I think it was like 13 points a game, 15 points a game his second year, 23 points a game his third year. He made this massive leap forward. Mm-hmm. And his skill set is, good Lord, he makes shots that you're like, He shouldn't be making that shot, and he just makes them over and over and over again. To me, he is the guy on that team, and I don't know that, you know, we always talk about like declaring who's the guy. I don't know that that really matters, honestly, but I think he is that guy ahead of Jaylen Brown, who's enormously talented. He was the number one player in America when he was in high school. So these are guys with wonderful pedigree. And then you mentioned Kemba Walker as well, who's the veteran and multiple all-stars. So I think Boston to me is another one of those teams. And you, I think you mentioned it, disappointed in the playoffs a little bit.
They did.
We keep wanting. So here's the teams in the East that we keep expecting more from. Philadelphia 76ers. Yep. Never did it. Never. Remember, it was trust the process, trust the process. The process didn't work.
Yeah,
the process is done.
Some people say it's still going. It's like it hasn't finished. Like, we're still waiting.
The process has to yield something at some point beyond a conference semifinals.
Yep.
And it's – I don't know when the process started, but what are we, 7, 8 years now? Six? Mm-hmm. I don't know. But in any case, I feel like we needed more from the Sixers. I feel like we needed more from the Bucks, and I feel like we needed more from the Celtics. So who's gotten in the way? The Raptors and the Heat.
Yep.
Those are the two teams that have gotten in the way from these three teams that we expect magical things from. I don't know that the Heat and the Raptors want to go away. I don't know that they're back.
They have something to say.
We can crown these teams in the East that have these young stars that we followed forever and ever and ever. But, you know, I don't know that the Raptors and the Heat just want to walk away and say, okay, guys, you're the stars. You can have it now. I just don't think it works out that way.
No.
So I'm fascinated to see if the Celtics can make the leap. And now, you know, we talk about teams competing for the Eastern Conference Championship. You know, Brooklyn's not going to wait.
Oh,
they're
no.
going right now.
Window is not huge. Like, they're going for it because they have to.
Yeah, the window is now. And it's not 5 years from now. It's not 3 years from now. It's right now. So they're all hands on deck. The East is going to be fascinating to me with a lot of teams press and go right now. And I just don't think that it's going to clear the way easily for any of the teams that we've anointed as the media, and that being Philly, Boston, and Milwaukee. I don't think it clears the way easily for them. They may win it. They may, but if they win it, they earned it.
They earned it. Listen, I love podcasting. Who doesn't? The process is great until you get to the part where you have to edit and distribute your podcast. It's time consuming, and we all love convenience. Well, here's the most convenient option possible. It's called Anchor. There's creation tools in the app that will allow you to record and edit right from your phone, tablet, or computer. It will distribute your podcast for you on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other popular platforms. You can make money from your podcast with minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go to the free Anchor app or anchor.fm right now to get started. And trust me, you won't regret it. They have to, because the East is just, it's really gotten competitive much more than we've seen in the past. I mean, we're talking about the top. Even if you look at the bottom, like I mentioned on Twitter yesterday, you think about the Wizards, who have just made a huge move. We're going to talk about in a minute. You think about the Hawks that have retooled. You think about teams at the bottom. Charlotte should be pretty solid. Like, those teams at the bottom will have something to say if they want to find their way into the playoff race. So it's not just a top loaded conference. Like, it's pretty deep, which is a lot to say compared to where we were a few years ago. It's come a long way.
Some of these teams getting to the playoffs is the objective now. I know that's true in Atlanta. I have to believe that's true in Charlotte as well. You wouldn't pay Gordon Hayward all that money. You overpaid him, and you knew you were overpaying him. But that's I think they sort of accept it. We're a small market team. We're not a big draw. To get somebody in here, we have to pay a little more than they're worth. They did it with Gordon Hayward. Whether you think it's a smart move or not, they did it, and they're putting their cards on the table. They're saying, we got to get in the playoffs now. We've got to make a step forward. And that's a lot of teams in the East. You really hit on something good there. Teams are trying. They're not trying to lose now. They're trying to win now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I want to go back to the point you were making about KD earlier, and you were talking about him being able to come back from that injury because of his unique build. And that reminds me of an article I read by Mike Prada. I think he's done some work for SB Nation in the past. Yep. But he spoke about this, and he said that KD has a variety of moves. He has this natural dip in his body that just doesn't require a ton of leg strength. Like, he has a very fluid motion.
Yep.
There's a cushion in his shooting percentages. Like, basically what he was trying to say is, like, KD was so good. He was here before the injury. If he loses 10 or 20% of his player, he goes from, like, okay, he goes from arguably the best player in the game to a top 10 player. A top 10 player is still a top 10 player. So you have him and Kyrie on the roster together. I mean, you're still going places. So I think that's why Brooklyn was so comfortable to pay him the max money coming off an Achilles, because they knew he has a cushion, a humongous cushion that separates him from almost any other NBA player and will allow him to come back in the lineup and still be a, you know, 20 plus point per game score on pretty good efficiency. I mean, if he loses a little bit of efficiency, like, hey, you go from being in the 99th percentile to 85th or 88th, something like that. It's like, hey, we'll take it.
That's fine.
Better than most of the league.
Here's the thing about KD to me that I will remember forever. He faced down LeBron James in the NBA Finals, and individually, he was better than LeBron James. Individually, not just part of a better team. He was individually better than LeBron in an NBA Finals. Who does that? Who in the world?
Like, pretty freaking special.
Yeah, you have alien. Extraordinary. You have to be out of this world extraordinary, and he did it. And that's the sort of talent that he has. And also, I think it's the respect he garners around the league. I remember LeBron James was asked after they beat the Warriors in the Finals, and then the Warriors came back and smoked them with KD. What was the difference? KD. That's it.
That man.
Yeah, he's like, if you could say to me, Bo, you get to be any one active NBA player in his prime for a day, who do you want to be? He's on the short list. He's on the short list, man. For You know, it's LeBron, it's KD. I don't know, Steph, maybe. I don't know. But yeah. I mean, he is of that sort of talent. And like you said, he has room. He has a margin of error. He can also tinker with his game in the way that Kobe and MJ did to figure out other ways to score easily that don't require him, you know, dribbling two dribbles along the baseline and flying through and stuffing on people. He can figure out other ways to do it. So I think he's going to be very good. Probably better than Kyrie already, just away. I really believe that. I mean, I just think he is of that sort of level. So I expect more of him than I do of nearly anyone.
I think you can just rely on that one-legged fadeaway for an entire game. You could just say, I'm going to be Dirk today.
And fine. Get
20. So that's the work project.
Just be able to say, I'm going to be Dirk for a day.
He has that. Yeah, that's how talented he is. He just takes parts from people's games, and he's good to go. But the next matchup on the docket, we're looking at Mavericks Lakers. So we had four incredible matchups between these teams last season. I went back and looked at the scores. The Lakers did take 3 out of 4. LeBron outplayed Luka in many of those matchups. But, I mean, Luka's back in year 3. He's better than ever. So you're looking at those two for being two. Well, we're talking about highlight guys.
Yeah.
Luka's next in line. Like, when you're looking at – I'm thinking about Luka. When I consider what he brings to the table, I think about LeBron. You take away the incredible, just ridiculous leaping ability, like that just gazelle quickness of getting up and down the court in like 3 seconds. You take that one part of his game away, you have Luka. Like, he has everything else in his game. Like, he has the passing. He has the scoring ability. You know, the vision is there. The IQ, the basketball IQ is on an incredible level. This guy can get your triple doubles, you know, at age 21. I mean, that's saying a lot. That's stuff that we saw from LeBron when he was his age. So it's like, the similarities are there.
I'm going to say something that's blasphemous. I think he's better in some ways than LeBron at the same age. I mean that. He's a better outside shooter without any question. Without any question. He faced better competition when he was 18 years old than LeBron did. He came over to this league having played in the Euro League at the highest level.
MVP?
MVP of the Euro League. I think he starts off, you know, like you said, he does not have LeBron's explosive vertical ability. I think he may have better lateral moves than LeBron. LeBron is a straight line driver. LeBron does not go dink, 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 dink.
Yep.
Luka can do that to a degree. He can shake you to a degree. And his passing ability, man, LeBron's one of the best passers I've ever seen.
Oh,
and so is Luka. Luka's right there. LeBron may, I mean, that's, it's sort of a pick'em, maybe LeBron. I think Magic is the best passer I've ever seen, but right there behind him is those guys, is particularly as far as people that are big and ball handlers. Those guys have extraordinary talent. A guy that gets forgotten a lot in that conversation is Penny Hardaway. But yeah, I think there's an argument to be made, and I'm just thinking about it now, I haven't even looked at it statistically, that Luka is as good at this point in his career as LeBron was.
I can see it.
You can look it up. Yeah, you can look it up. His shooting is certainly vastly better than LeBron's was.
Yeah, those step backs. You know, LeBron, you didn't see this LeBron stepping back from 30 feet, you know.
With no efficiency at all. So I would say this. I'd say, you know, it's sort of pick 'em. If you want the athleticism, it's LeBron. If you want the skill and shooting ability, it's Luka. But I think I think there's something similar. I think it's good that you mentioned them together like that too, because one of the things that Luka has that I think is underrated is when he's playing off that pick and roll, he's got a body frame that's thick like LeBron's.
Yeah, he's strong.
Little contact, right? When you're going to the hole, the contact doesn't throw him off. He's not flailing out of screen like I just about did there. He's able to hang in there with that contact. That is another gift that LeBron had. And the weird thing, and this is where when you're young and in basketball media or playing, you learn 20 years down the road, Luka's taken from LeBron what LeBron taught along the way. He's learned from that, and he's incorporated his game into that in his game when he's 21. So now when Luka's 30 or 35 and the next kid comes along that's 18, he's going to have learned everything that LeBron did and everything that Luka did, and he's going to have that when he's 21.
Yep.
That's how the game grows. And so for Luka, I really, really, really am excited to see how he gets better, what he does better, because, you know, you look at him, you're like, what can he do better?
He's already top 10 player in the league.
In the playoffs last year, I was like, name me five better players. Name me five. I don't know that I could name five better than Luka. He was that good. Yeah. So I was excited to see the Mavericks sign James Johnson to protect him a little bit. that was an interesting move, because I was joking around on Twitter because the Morris brothers were giving him Luka, you know, little physical threats out there.
They picked on him. They definitely picked on him.
Nobody's more threatening in the league than James Johnson.
Hey, black belt.
Nobody
watch yourself when you're around that guy.
I don't care who you are. You're not messing with James Johnson.
Oh, absolutely not.
So, and,
you know, this matchup is so incredible because it's like these two players grab so much attention, but they both made moves to really kind of bring themselves up in that conference. So you're looking at two players. You're looking at Schroeder for the Lakers, and you're looking at Josh Richardson for the Mavericks. I think both of those guys are going to play pivotal roles in this game. Schroeder wants to be a starter. He made that known.
Yep.
I think it was just yesterday. He was on the, you know, went the media day, and they were speaking to him about what he expects from this season. And he made it clear he wants to be a starter. So I was getting Carmelo Anthony vibes from him. I wasn't quite sure how to take that, but he's capable. I mean, the guy has displayed an ability to be a great floor general. Last season, he came off the bench, but I think in either role, he's very good. And if we're thinking about one of the great lineups from last season from LA, it was Avery Bradley, Danny Green, Braun Davis, and JaVale McGee. So if you take out Green and Avery Bradley, you put in Schroeder and Wesley, you know, you think about Wesley Matthews, you know, you can approximate that kind of impact that those guys had together. So I can see where his, you know, his influence in the starting lineup will be felt. It's going to be a great fit for him because he's improved as a player since he was in Atlanta down here. You know, I saw him play a little bit in his earlier days. I'm sure you did as well. And he's a different player. He's really learned a lot, and his shot has come a long way specifically.
I think that's a really good point. I think his shot is much better than it used to be. And I think that's an important point because the concern with those two is that LeBron needs the ball in his hands to be successful. Schroeder needs the ball in his hands to be successful. Who do you give the ball to? Well, the answer is LeBron, of course.
Every time. But
I think there's a way to manage that too. I think if it's important to Schroeder to start, I think you can start them both. And maybe LeBron plays the first 6 minutes, Schroeder plays the first 12 minutes, and then LeBron comes back in and plays the majority. And then you just sort of shift them into alternating groups after the start. And if being a starter is that important to Schroeder, you could probably accommodate him and make both of those happen. To me, Dennis Schroeder is as good as anyone in the NBA at blowing by his defender. I don't know that there's a quicker guy. His first step is bizarre quick.
It's incredible.
It's insane. So he can break down a defense. And so imagine Schroeder breaks past his first man. The help comes, and there's Anthony Davis swooping along the baseline. He's going to have opportunities to set up guys like he's never had before. And that's where he's got to learn. He's got to say, okay, that's not, you know, Steven Adams, who's very good. That's Anthony Davis, who's several levels beyond that. I can set him up and he can bring that home. So I think that's going to be fascinating for him. Josh Richardson's a good piece for the Dallas Mavericks too. And I think the thing that Josh Richardson is going to find out is there's a similarity in basketball and soccer in this to me, is you have to always be aware when you don't have the ball of where you are. And with Luka Doncic, he's a special basketball player. So if you get into positions where you are open, where you are free, he's going to find you. So his movement without the ball, particularly when Luka has it, to create opportunities for himself, to ease the pressure from Luka, is going to be critical for me. And I think he's able to do that. I think, you know, I talked to you earlier about Christmas is when I start to evaluate teams in a normal year. I think there's going to be a month and a half learning period for these guys to figure out what they're supposed to be doing out there on the court. We won't have it perfect yet. We'll see some of the warts on Christmas Day. But I think that's the thing to track, is how they adapt to the dominant teammates. The other interesting thing I saw in LA is that I think they were talking about Anthony Davis going for this year's MVP.
I saw that.
I like
you mentioned that. Yeah, it's attainable. I mean,
the MVP to me is a young man's award.
Definitely.
Regular season award. Mm-hmm. And LeBron doesn't care about a regular season award.
No, he cares.
Give me championships. Give me rings. I want to catch MJ. Mm-hmm. That's the game he's playing right now.
Yep. So
he's trying to win championships. And if Anthony Davis wants to win a regular season MVP, I can see LeBron facilitating that and making him very happy and scoring 23 points a game, 22 points a game, while Anthony Davis scores 32. And I think that could work. So what I'm saying is, I think there's a lot of opportunities for happiness in LA. And I think they can manage that team in a way that every player gets individually what they want, or at least every important player. And then they can sort of realign at the playoffs and go for that team goal that's in LeBron's interest.
For sure. That team is just so, you know, they're so connected. You know, you go back to the bubble and you look at how they kind of work together even before the bubble. They're always on the same page. They were always rooting for each other. You know, they're dapping, they're high-fiving, they're hugging each other. You know, post-championship, you know, of course, they were all, you know, in this great mood. Like, they're a great team. They have great camaraderie. They have great connections all the way up and down the roster. I don't think this year will be any different for them. But one team right across the road that is going to have challenges with that. We've kind of read about that in the past few days. If you read The Athletic, you know about what the Clippers had dealt with. They're coming from the opposite perspective. So they have as much talent as the Lakers do.
Yep.
They signed Serge Ibaka in the offseason. Yep. They have pieces for days. They re-signed Marcus Morris. They're coming at you with pieces from all over the floor, you know, from guard play to wing to big, getting rid of Harrell. You know, I think it's going to be a huge difference maker for them. But ultimately, it just comes down to how are these guys going to connect with each other? You know, you're bringing back largely the same roster. You know, you jettisoned Harrell, but for the most part, it's the same. Lou Williams, Reggie Jackson was re-signed, which actually kind of surprised me a little bit. But, you know, Paul George and Kawhi, oh, wow, they're getting this preferential treatment. We don't like that. We don't enjoy that. Like, that's not going to change. I mean, the stars definitely are treated a little bit differently from the 10th and 11th man on the roster. There's no doubt about that.
Yep.
But I'm just curious to see how that's going to translate to the court, specifically against the Nuggets. That was the team that really kicked them out of the playoffs. And the schedule makers knew what they were doing with this matchup.
Sure.
They put them together for a reason. This is going to be Paul George's time to get his reputation back, because his reputation is absolutely destroyed. Looking at Twitter, no one gives him any respect anymore. He's a choker. You know, he's blowing smoke. He's saying that he didn't get to run pick and rolls last season. He ran a bunch of pin downs, and he was like a spot-up shooter, which the stats bear that out to be false. He ran plenty of pick and rolls. He ran less actions off the down screen, so that's obviously false. But there's going to be keys for him to be able to get back on track. And if you have one less stout defender to worry about, Jeremy Grant's out of the picture.
Yep,
this is his time to go out there and get 30, 35, and reassert himself. So that's what I expect from him in this matchup. I think Kawhi's going to be great, but Paul George is going to take this as an opportunity to remind people, I'm still here. I'm still all NBA material. I'm still one of the great wings in this game.
I think it's important that he does that too, right? I feel like it's important not for just him, but I think for him mentally, he needs to reassert himself. I think for his teammates to see that. I think for Clippers fans to see that. I think for the league to see that. You're right. It's playoff Paul that takes the bad rap, right? So his real redemption is going to come in June and July or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think he has to start working to rehab that now. And the other thing that I think is important is the Clippers overall have to redevelop some chemistry. I've said forever that like Lou Williams is the coolest guy in the league. He's the just everybody sort of gravitates to that guy. I think he can play a part in that as a bridge builder. And I hope that he does. Because that team needs to come together. And they may trade Lou for all I know. But I think, you know, they need to come together and they need to be in a better frame of mind. They've got a new coach now. So maybe. But that loss last year, it wasn't just that they lost. It was how they lost that was particularly painful. They choked it away. They choked it. And so for them, they have to come back. They have to prove who they were. And then in their own town, for now, in their own building, is the team that's the champs. Mm-hmm. So they've just got a lot of hurdles to overcome. They can, and it'd be a great redemption story. And they certainly have the talent. Kawhi and Paul George, okay, you've already got the talent. Yep. So, but doing that is tough. And, you know, like you said, and you made a good point, the schedule makers knew what they were doing because who they're looking at, Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, those guys, again, that took it from them. It's going to be fun to watch, man.
Fantastic. It's going to be a fantastic way to end the day. You know, our nightcap is going to be Jokic. It's going to be Paul George. It's going to be Kawhi. And, I mean, last thing on this, I mean, you go and look at who these guys have now. It's all the way up and down these rosters. It's competitive basketball. And I'm interested to see how a guy like, you know, Jokic and Jamal respond to this, because historically Jamal Murray has been an up and down player. So I really want to see if that bubble performance was a flash in the pan or it was something that he's going to grab with him, take with him going forward. Because if he does, Denver launches into that conversation of not just being a fun story, but actual legitimate, like, title contender. And for Jamal Murray, it could mean an all-NBA berth, you know, all-star berth, or individual accolades for him to give him that confidence he's seeking. So I'm interested to see how he moves forward from one of the great performances, playoff performances we've seen in recent history.
There were a couple of stars born in the bubble. Jamal Murray is one of those. I think Donovan Mitchell, although he was already a known name, I think he became a bit more of a star in the bubble. But what Jamal Murray did, some of the shots that he made, some of the highlights that he provided for us, and the fact that he just kept doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it over and over and over again, and teams couldn't find an answer for him, I think that has to give him confidence as a player. And if I were him, I would be the one guy that's really glad this season's coming back right away.
Oh, yeah.
I want to capitalize on that, right? I would want to reestablish that. I want to ingrain that in who I am. I am that player. That wasn't a fluke. That is me. So I think it's important for him to do that because, like you said, if you've got Jokic, who's a unicorn-type player, just all sorts of bizarre skills that really work in the NBA today, and Murray, who can be an elite scorer now. We can talk about him in terms of like 26, 27, 28 points a game, and pair that with the rest of what they have in Denver. Some of it, I don't know if it works. Some of it, I do. You know, I'm excited. I'm excited for that team. The wild card for me is, what does Porter have? You know, because I think there's real talent there. Can he deliver that consistently? And does it fit next to Jokic? Does it fit next to who they have? Those are questions I can't wait to see answered because – you know, you talk Murray, you talk Jokic. Let's find another guy that's really there. And I think it could be him stepping into that role.
Absolutely. Wholeheartedly agree on that one. I know we're running a little long here, guys. I'm going to keep you all night. But one last segment here, just want to cover with you. this trade that really struck us out of nowhere last night. You know, I'm sitting at my dinner table. I'm just kind of reading some articles and just kind of minding my own business. And then all of a sudden they drop this on us, you know, right at the start of individual workouts for the season and 3 weeks away from the regular season. And this is something that we'd heard whispers about in the past few weeks.
Yeah.
But apparently from what I heard, the GMs came back together. I guess they just picked up the phone. They said, hey, let's go over this again. Are you sure you want to do this trade? Because we talked about it before and we hung up the phone. So maybe this is something that could benefit us. And they said, oh, you know, what the heck? Let's go ahead and swap. You know, they're making similar money. Like I looked up their contracts and there's only $100,000 difference between the money for Westbrook and John Wall. And it's so eerily similar, not just how much they're making, but the kind of player they are, which brings into question, what is James Harden looking for? If the reports are saying that he wants somebody, he wasn't feeling Russell Westbrook, he likes John Wall, what does he see in him? They're both fiery players. They're both explosive. They're both streaky shooters. They're both good passers. So what's the difference between their play styles? So that's the big question I need answered going forward into this season. How that's going to translate on the court, I'm not sure. John Wall still seems to be a sketchy fit with Harden. I mean, John Wall, I saw something yesterday, believe it or not, saying that John Wall, back when he was playing, was even worse off the ball in terms of just moving and staying active than Westbrook was. So if you look at it from that perspective, it's like, it's I can't clones. See how this works out.
It's yeah. clones. So yeah. here's what I would say. The reports indicate that there were some personality problems between John Wall and Bradley Beal, right? So mm-hmm. you start there. Russell Westbrook is the more proven commodity at this very moment because we just don't know how John Wall is going to come back. Hopefully, you know, from all the reports that we've seen, he looks really good. So hopefully he is good. John Wall he averages more assists per game than Russell Westbrook does. He's a little bit better of a passer. So maybe that helps a James Harden a little bit, right? It's not a ton of help, but it's a little bit. And then for the Washington Wizards, the thing that's interesting to me is, so if Russell Westbrook, let's just assume that Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal get along. Does this get them in the conversation of an 8 seed if it works out? I asked this on Twitter the other day. What's the best possible, realistically possible outcome of Beal and Westbrook together for Washington? Is it the 8 seed in the playoffs and you make it and you're a playoff team and you get a couple home playoff games and maybe you build from there? Is it a second round playoff team? Can you get through a round of the Eastern Conference? I don't know about that. But I think the thing that's interesting to me is more the Washington side is what's the absolute peak. Because if Wall and Beal weren't going to work together, and let's say Beal's their best player. He is their best player. He's their best known commodity. And you're not keeping Beal if Wall's there. Then I think it's a fascinating move because it's really, ask yourself this, who else could you have traded those guys for?
Yeah.
They had to be traded for each other, right?
Pretty much.
That's it, right? Nobody's going to fall for that trade any other way.
Yeah.
It's not that they're bad players. It's the contract, right? Mm-hmm. If they were both on a 1 year, $7 million contract, yeah, maybe I entertain having them.
Sure. But they're not.
That's the deal. It's the contract that's the deal. It's not the players so much. It's the contract that's the deal.
Absolutely.
So I can't wait to see it. I don't know. Just look, Russ is a fun player for me as a top 10 guy.
Oh, yeah.
But
how many times has he been on the top 10? Just like go back to your history, like all his highlights in OKC. He has to be one of the probably five most frequent appearances on that.
That's what I'm saying. Like he may be, it's LeBron, it's him. For a while, it was Blake Griffin was on there a ton. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But Westbrook's up there with anybody.
Oh, yeah. Westbrook's
up there with anybody. But that's not – I'm a top 10 announcer. He's a coach. This is a coach that you're talking about. Sorry about that. He's a coach that you're talking about, you know, in Washington that wants to get something out of those players. Does that work?
Mm-hmm.
Does that work? That's a different equation. And I don't know how you can't get those players. They're at an age now where they're not going to be different players.
Right. Yeah.
They're not going to change who they are. They're what they are.
Set in their ways. Exactly. Yeah.
I do think John Wall's a little better at his peak for James Harden. And this is just a half step. I think it's a little better for James Harden. So we'll see what that translates into if it works out that way. But the Russell Westbrook piece in Washington, I just don't know. And look, we, you know, at SBC, Tommy Shepard, their GM, is a friend of the program. Mm-hmm. I've talked to Tommy a number of times. I love Tommy, and I want it to work out for him.
Yeah.
I just don't know, you know, it's probably better in the sense that you've created a better locker room. I just don't know what the best case scenario is. They're not winning a championship. I mean, it's not that. Definitely not. I don't think. Do you think there's a way that they get to the Eastern Conference Finals?
I really don't.
Just What's the best they could do?
I would say sixth seed in the playoffs. If I'm thinking about a dream scenario, everything comes together because the talent is there. Thomas Bryant is a nice player. Yep. Hachimura is definitely going to take another step.
Interesting. Yeah.
They've been building a nice roster, but at the end of the day, Westbrook is too much of a liability. Like, somebody was on Twitter earlier making a highlight tape of his last season in Houston, and there were like three or four shots like at the end of the game that were either bricks or air balls, like just jump shots from the mid-range or three. So he's one of the most dreadful jump shooters in the league. His free throw shooting is tanked. So the combination of those two factors doesn't really bode well for somebody in the playoff scenario where every team is hunting you. They're hunting your weaknesses. That's just not going to work well. So to answer your question, I don't see how they even make it out of the first round because they're probably playing a Philadelphia. They're playing a Toronto. They're playing a Milwaukee. That's just too much to overcome, in my opinion.
So I looked up the stats today. Russell Westbrook had his career high effective field goal percentage last year. His career high was last year with the Houston Rockets. You want to know what it was?
I'm sure it's not saying much.
49.3%.
Oh, man.
Career high.
Wow. That's
career high.
Incredible.
He's not an efficient player. He's not. And I know we live in an age of efficiency. He's not that. Look, if you need a guy that can get off a shot with 3 seconds left, he can get off a shot.
Well, yeah, there's no doubt about that. I don't know where it's going, but
it may not go. But he can get a shot off. So I just, you know, it's going to be interesting to me to see how they work out. But again, I just keep thinking best case scenario. Best case scenario in Houston, they're not doing anything.
Yeah, I think it's a similar story. You know, swapping these guys, I don't think it changes the fortunes for either team.
Yeah.
But, you know, the big question for each side is, like, for Washington, like we just talked about, how far can they go? I think they're very fun. I think they're competitive, but I don't see them really making any huge steps. And then in Houston, it's really about what are you gaining? So it's like you get a pick in return that won't convey until 2023 at the earliest.
Yep.
By John Wall. That unlike KD, who we just talked about, is not going to be – he doesn't have the luxury of that margin of error that we talked about
with KD. No.
He's not 6'10", 6'11", 7 feet. He's 6'4", and he actually did rely a lot on his speed and burst to be a productive player. So if he loses a step, that definitely hurts his game. So I'm just not sure how he's going to fare coming off of an Achilles.
Let me paint one optimistic possibility.
Okay.
There are three point guards at the 2010s that are the most athletic to me in their prime. Russell Westbrook, John Wall, and Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose went through injury hell.
Mm-hmm.
And he's on the other side now, and he is still not an MVP type player, but he's found a way to make a game for himself.
Mm-hmm.
He's found a way to change his game and create different opportunities than he was able to create before and become a player that people value at some level. If John Wall with more athleticism can take a piece of what Derrick Rose did and learn how to create different facets of your game and be better. You know, we talked earlier about they are who they are. Derrick Rose is an example to the contrary. He was forced. He was forced, if you ask me, because of the injuries and the loss of athleticism. And I think John Wall may be too. If he's not the same athlete, he's going to have to come up with something.
For sure. I think the potential for him to adapt is there because his playmaking is present. He's not relying on being a 20-point scorer and nothing else. He is a very good distributor, to your point. So he's going to have there's a window for him to be a very good player. I think his peak is gone as we work with Derrick Rose. But, you know, if you can be a, you know, 17, 18 points per game guy and throw in 8 or 9 assists, something like that, I mean, that's more than enough for Harden and, you know, and what they're looking for.
And be reasonably efficient. So the other thing I noticed about him is he turns it over much less than Russell Westbrook.
True, yeah.
That's an advantage.
Over machine.
That's an advantage. So there's little things that he can do that are better than Russell Westbrook. It's not going to be massive world-changing difference, but it's little things that are better. Russell Westbrook may give Washington an immediate injection of offensive punch. Mm-hmm. He's gonna have to take a lot of shots to do it, He may give them immediate injection. So, again, I don't think it's gonna be amazing results for either team, but it could be slightly better for both if things work out.
Agree. Those are great points. Both these guys have something to offer, and both their teams. I mean, I can't wait to see how this all unfolds in the locker room. It can Harden finally find a backcourt mate that he's not strangling at the end of the season. I mean, Chris Paul was the first victim with Westbrook. At the end of the season, it's like he's just done with these guys. So hopefully John Wall, third time's the charm, he can break that trend.
Yeah, I think what James Harden wants is somebody who's willing to give him the ball whenever he wants it. And when James Harden needs a break, can do something semi-efficiently and not screw the world up. I think that's probably about what he wants in a backcourt mate.
And it's possible. It's very possible considering the player that John Wall has been. We'll have to see how that manifests coming off of that injury.
Exactly.
But I think that's going to about do it for us here, Bo. I want to thank you again for your presence on this program. Great to talk with you again after SBC and catch up and just kind of, you know, get a feel for what you're thinking about this season. It's going to be a lot of fun, and can't wait to see more top 10. You know, it's been a while since we've had it on board here, but we're all excited for it. So appreciate you coming on.
It's been my pleasure. I am so thrilled we are getting back to work. I'm so thrilled that the NBA is getting at least back to normal at some degree. And it seems like the world's turning in a good direction. So I'm excited to see where the NBA is, not only at the start of the season, but in the middle of the season and in the playoffs. And I know you're going to be along for the ride. And I'm just so excited for all these basketball fans. And I'm thankful for all of you that follow the NBA and follow for what we do on the NBA.com top 10 and everything else. It's an absolute joy.
Yeah, absolutely. We're excited to see you back on the program. And thanks for joining us again. And be sure to check him out, NBA TV. He'll be back on there to top 10 for this season, just a few weeks away, as I mentioned earlier. And for us at Business Casual Basketball, you can find us at BC Basketball 2. That's going to be our Twitter and Instagram handle. And then bcbasketball.info. We've got some articles coming out soon. The free agent list is up for this year. 21's coming soon. So be sure to check that out, guys. A lot of content coming at you soon. But that's going to about do it for us on this program. Thanks so much for tuning in. Enjoy the rest of your evening. Enjoy this time of a little bit of downtime before the season. It's going to be up and, you know, high flow, high pace action before we know it. But until then, guys, take care, and we'll see you back on the program real soon.